What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to Double M Live. First time we doing a post-game edition, but Mike Nice and I, we're not new to the post-game shows. You know, we've been doing post-game shows, usually for football, but we're doing a post-game show for the Boston Celtics and a postseason show for the Boston Celtics as they have been eliminated from the playoffs 4-1. They didn't get swept, y'all. They didn't get swept on the backs of Tatum. But the Celtics season is over. And that's what we are here today to talk about. The Celtics season is over.
You know, I could go off in various directions with everything I want to say, but I knew once we got the show started, I was going to say it like this. You come off a season where you made it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals in a bubble, and you think you can only ascend from there. You can only get better. You can only get better from there. You get to the following season, this current season that we just witnessed, you're a seventh seed. Your whole season is just a roller coaster ride, some good, some bad, a lot more bad than good. You get to the following season. And then, bam, you're eliminated from the playoffs by the Brooklyn Nets, who, by all means, far better team than you. And not just the Brooklyn Nets, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Philadelphia 76ers. I know Miami Heat got swept, but I would say Miami Heat would have faced the Celtics and just bullied them all over again. This team, this 2020-2021 Boston Celtics team was nothing but disappointments from beginning to end. And in the start, when the game started playing, it didn't start at the beginning of the regular season, first five games in, first 10 games in. No, it started when the offseason began. And you saw what the general manager, Danny Ainge, did with this team. Nothing. Nothing to improve, nothing to get better. So not even before basketball it was even put through the net, did I have a feeling that, yeah, this is not the team that you expected to take the next step after making it so deep into the playoffs last year. So as I sit here right now following, you know, the elimination to the Nets, am I shocked? Not at all. Am I surprised? Not at all. Because this was the type of season that was bound to come after you saw how Danny Ainge put this team together.
Man, you know, sometimes this when you're stressed, sometimes you just got to pour a little wine. Got to pour a little wine for the homies, man. Celtics eliminated. This is to them. There was a comment that just came up that really got me reasoning why I got this wine. Kemba Walker.
Oh my God.
We gotta start there, man. We gotta start there with Kemba Walker, Mike Nice.
Before you dive in, Marv, just want to say again, you tuned in to Double M Live. This is gonna be, you know, post-game show, a season recap. We're gonna talk Kemba, we're gonna talk Danny Ainge, we're gonna talk all of that and some more. Please be sure to like and subscribe and press that share button, because there's some Celtics fans out there that's probably looking for a place to vent and go off and share all their thoughts and feelings. Please, Double M, we welcome you. We want all those thoughts and feelings and curse words and just the heat. Bring it here to Double M. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Double M is live right now, and we want to hear from y'all.
Kemba Walker. So, if you haven't been following this this series right now with the Nets versus Celtics, Kemba missed the last two games. He missed Game 5 and missed Game 4 with a bone bruise. If you've been following the Celtics for the past 2 years, you know that Kemba's knee has been wonky, to say the least, to the point where all year he didn't play any back-to-backs. Matter of fact, he didn't play the first 20 games, if I'm correct. Kemba didn't play the first 20 game. Then he was on this back-to-back limitation, you know, rest the knee. And then come to find out, we get through the season. Kemba wasn't great throughout the season. He wasn't spectacular, but he showed flashes closing out the year that, okay, this is a guy that we can finally start to count on to provide 18 to 20 points a game. But once again, just like last year, when the lights got bright, one Kemba didn't perform. If you look back at game three, when Jason Tatum dropped 50 and the Celtics were able to win their one and only game, you think if Celtics win a game, it's only Tatum and Kemba. Kemba had to have dropped 20 plus as well. Poor shooting night, story of his season. And then the last, he misses two games. He missed two games on a bone bruise. Just to remind everybody, this is a guy who's owed 30 plus million for the next 2 years, 60 plus for the next 2 years. And he's really untradeable. Untradeable, hasn't performed. This, you can blame Kyrie for how he left, and then you was forced upon getting Kemba Walker. But this whole Kemba Walker situation has been an utter, complete disaster. And it's going to be, I know Mike, we're going to dive into all of Danny Ainge's moves and how this roster was created. But the reason why the Celtics are not going to be able to take that next step or that jump into becoming a championship team in that window that we had was the failure of acquiring Kemba Walker. Now, we can bring up the injuries, we can bring up the play and everything, but Kemba Walker experiment has been a failure. Just like the Gordon Hayward one was. The Gordon Hayward experience was a failure. He was injured all the time. Every time we came to the playoffs, it didn't work out. Now we got this Kemba Walker thing. And unfortunately, it's a failure.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing with Kemba Walker, as you know, looking at the Kyrie Irving experiment failure, Gordon Hayward experiment failure. Kyrie, by this point, if you don't know by now, let me repeat it. He gave up on the Celtics and wanted to get out of here. That's the situation with him. Gordon Hayward, he was ready to go, and then the injury bug just hit him. Next thing you know, he's back. Bam, he's injured. You got to deal with the injury. Bam, he's injured again. You got to deal with another injury. Kemba, the situation with Kemba is a little different because here it is this season, coming into the season, and who maybe a little prior to this season, I don't know. But it seems as if Celtics knew or have known this guy has some issues with his knee, especially coming into the season. Celtics apparently had an idea that he has some issues with his knee, which is why the whole load management and sit him playing, he's not playing back to back. All that conversation and thought they formulated because Celtics had an idea. Now, coming into this regular season, this is why a lot of stuff I'm going to say is going to get back to Danny Ainge. Coming into this regular season, if you know that Kemba Walker is dealing with a knee injury, a knee issue where he's going to miss the first 20 games, he's going to miss half the season, he can't play back-to-backs, there's a chance he won't be as reliable as the team probably wants him to be because he has this continuous knee situation. As a GM, what do you do to combat that situation? Kemba, I understand, Kemba's all smiles. He's going to do what he does. The thing about Kemba, he's all smiles, but one thing about it, as bad as he's played at times, Kemba's going to go out there and do what he can in a sense. Whether you're going to be happier or mad with how he performs or whatnot, if he's on the court, he's going to try to provide something. Could he be more aggressive sometimes? He could try. Either way, the fact is, knowing that you're not going to get a fully healthy Kemba Walker all season long, Danny Ainge, what do you do to combat that situation? Yeah, you draft Pritchard. Cool. Pritchard up and down rookie season. That's what you can expect from rookies. You tried to bring in Jeff Teague, and that was a complete failure. I don't know if Jeff Teague is going to be on a roster next season the way this current season went. But knowing that you need probably another guy to add more a scoring punch because Kemba might be there, might not be there, Danny Ainge didn't do anything to really address that. Even in Gordon Hayward's situation, I know people, I know you guys would get on Gordon Hayward. At the end of the day, when healthy, Gordon Hayward averaged what, 17 points last year, 18 points? What do you do to replace that? So, you know, back to the Kemba situation, you know, it just bothers me that if the Celtics had an idea that you're going to be dealing with the up and down in and out of the lineup, Kemba Walker, I don't see what your plan B was, knowing that he was not going to be there. Because at the end of the day, big picture, you want Tatum, Brown, and Kemba leading your team. Tatum and Brown was there. Obviously, Brown wasn't there in the Nets series, but Tatum and Brown have been there all season long. Kemba in and out. What do you do to combat that issue, Danny Ainge?
Here's the devil's advocate with what you're saying. Money, man. It comes down to money. It's not much you can do when you gave a max to Kemba Walker. It comes down to that, because you did bring in Jeff Teague. And prior to the season, I think most people were excited for that move. I know I wasn't mad when I saw Jeff Teague. I'm like, oh, okay, bad. Jeff Teague just came off last year as a decent player. That would have been a great backup for Kemba. And then he fooled all of us, because even in the preseason, he looked pretty damn good. Once the season came, I don't know who that was. That was Cliff Teague. That was his brother, who played us as a fool, and it didn't work out. But the Kemba situation is money, Mike. You gave that dude the max. You just paid Tatum the max the prior to this season too. Jaylen Brown, you gave him 100 mil. It's money. That's why the Kemba situation is a failure, because you gave a dude a max contract that has not been able to perform for you for 2 years. Last year, he was all right. He was pretty good during the season. All-star. I think he was even starting all-star. Got into the bubble. We find out it's a knee, and we find out he's just not aggressive enough. And if Kemba was the Kemba we thought he was, we were to the finals. Even with the roster that we had last year, you're beating the Miami Heat instead of him getting cooked by Tyler Hero and Goran Dragic. Fast forward to this year, he's barely around. He's not around. And when he is playing, he's shooting poorly. Poorly. Showed you some flashes here and there, but it was not the Kemba we once knew. Go into this series against the Brooklyn Nets. Obviously, the Celtics had no chance. We know that. No Jaylen Brown, overmatched. We saw how the season played out. But damn. For you not to be able to come out and play these last two games, it just doesn't look good. Doesn't look good, especially when you start seeing Chris Paul on the other side of the country. He's telling his coach, "The hell you talking about? Shoulder, not shoulder. I'm playing this game. I'm gonna fight it out." I mean, granted, his team has a winning chance. Celtics have no winning chance to beat in the Brooklyn Nets, but it just looks bad on this whole season how Kemba went out. The knee's going to be an issue. I think you brought it up earlier to me off air, just how Joe Sway, when he came on the show, and he said that, you know, Kemba's issue might be deeper than what it really is, and he might need surgery. And it's like, damn, maybe if he does get surgery this summer,
it's over for Kemba.
He doesn't even start the season with us. Kevin's saying that he will be a Houston Rocket in a few months. I think he's talking about Kemba Walker. The only way you can trade Kemba is what the Houston Rockets did, right, with Westbrook. Or what Washington did with John Wall. You got to trade back contract with back contract. And hope that the contract you get back, there's some life to it. That's it. That's the only way, because Russell Westbrook had an untradeable contract, and so did John Wall. So you want this bad contract, you get this bad contract, and let's see if it works out for either of us.
Yeah, it's tough for Kemba. I mean, I think most people assume he's not going anywhere. He's not. You're stuck with Kemba Walker. Definitely for the next year, maybe next 2 years. So with that being said, from all indications, it doesn't seem like surgery is a route for Kemba right now. It's looking like they're gonna, oh, he's gonna rest his knee all off season, get treatment, and you know, be right now. That's all that it seems like. Who knows? Maybe in a week or two, they're gonna, all right, yeah, Kemba's opting for surgery. You got to get something done to his knee. We don't know, but the fact remains is whether he gets surgery or not, he most likely will be a Boston Celtics during the 21-22 season. Now, all of this is being said with the idea of Danny Ainge got to find a way to fix this damn team. Danny Ainge has to find a way to fix this team. Your two stars in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown aren't going anywhere. And if anybody thinks they need to be moved, nah, not a chance. I know people, well, maybe you move. Nah. Tatum and Brown, I'm solidified and locked in with those two guys because I still push forward with the idea that they need to have a better team around them. And here's the conversation I continue to have. And again, it leads back to the general manager, Danny Ainge. You have these two young stars. And don't get it twisted. As great as Jaylen Brown and Tatum play, they are still young. 23, 24 years old. That's still young. That's young. So you have these two young all-stars on your team. Good. That's great. You don't need any more young players because the two young players you have are very good. We're talking about probably top 10 in their position in the league. Easily. Once you have these two young players already, you don't need to add any more young players. I'm talking Grant Williams, Semi Ojeleye, Tremont Waters, Edwards, Tocofo. None of them need to be on this team next year. And you go into the draft. I said this last year, and I'll say it again this year as well. Screw the draft. You don't need to worry about draft picks right now. You don't need to worry about, oh, well, let me see. Oh, this guy over at this university is looking good. Let me start to. No, you don't have to worry about that right now because you have a team that showed you a year ago, just with the right pieces and the right moving parts, you could be a contending team because you have.
Oh, that's gone. That team's gone. The window's closed.
Not completely because you Tatum and Brown are still there.
Mike, it closed, bro. I don't know what to tell you. It's closed.
The team they just played with, yeah, it looks closed for sure. Yeah. But at the end of the day, Mike, Tatum and Brown is still Mike, the building.
You're making it sound like you can just drop all these players and pick up some veterans and boom. It's not that easy.
It's not that easy. It's a start. You have to start somewhere.
That's what I'm saying. This team is not going to be competing for a championship next year. It's not. You're nowhere close to Milwaukee, Brooklyn, and Philly. You're nowhere close to that.
I believe if you get away from this idea of we need to try to give these young players, you're watching these series with these playoff teams. It's veterans and proven like vets on the team getting minutes. We got the Celtics over here trying to see what they can squeeze out of a guy in Langford who damn near didn't play half the season. You're trying to squeeze stuff out of Grant Williams, who's continuously showed you that he sucks. And the fact that Brad Stevens, one game starts him, one game sits him, one game, you don't trust him. Pritchard, I think most people like Pritchard, but come on, he's a rookie. And sometimes you're a rookie, and yeah, you might play great and have a great rookie season, or sometimes you're a rookie and, you know, it's up and down for you because it's your first year in the league. Naismith, same thing. First year in the league, up and down, he's still trying to figure it out. These are the guys that the Celtics are putting their trust in. Now, yeah, obviously a quick fix not going to necessarily jump you to a championship team. But damn, if you can at least get back into being contention. There's no way this Celtics team was on the brink of being in the play. Well, they were in the playing game, but they should have not even been near the playing game this past season.
I mean, you can... When you look at this season, you bring up Danny, I bring up Kemba, when you really think of it, the reason why I said this team cannot not get back to a championship contending team is due to the fact that the reason why you were there, you thought you had three stars. Jaylen Brown emerged this season, and it was beautiful to see. Tatum, I think now in everyone's eyes, we see it. That we see that dude is special, and he's the superstar in this league, and damn near could be top five in the next year or two. That's how special he is. Could be top five. But we've also seen it doesn't matter if you have a superstar on your team that's top five, doesn't make you a championship contender. Not having Kemba Walker at his full strength for probably the rest of his career, because we don't know how bad this knee situation is, hurts the Celtics tremendously. Money gets tired. I'm just thinking of it as money, Mike. I hear what you're saying, but at the end of the day, you can't avoid money. And Celtics have thrown money into a man that is you're stuck with. Then you have the trade exception, the TPE, when you were supposed to bring in someone for Gordon Hayward. You use most of it for Evan Fournier. Money is an issue with the Boston Celtics. It's the truth.
Yeah, a little bit of a constraint there. Obviously, because you got this contract on Kemba, you didn't expect him to play not up to his contract. Are we sitting here saying we think it's over for Kemba? And I don't mean over in a Celtics uniform, but I mean in terms of who he is as a player.
He showed me in two playoff series what I needed to see. What they say? Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. He's shown me twice now what he is in a playoff series. The knee is not right. And you said it yourself, if he gets surgery this year, that means we're not expecting him to be himself till the year after.
There comes another comment coming in, Clifford.
Shout out to Clifford.
And this has definitely popped up over and over again as Celtics fans and, you know, people having conversation. Brad Stevens, how much of this is on Brad Stevens? And I mean, personally, will I say Brad Stevens is Red Auerbach? Will I say Brad Stevens is Phil Jackson? Will I say Brad Stevens is, you know, Pat Riley? I won't say all of that. No. But I don't think Brad Stevens is a bad coach. And I know all this talk of, oh, well, he lost the team and they're toning him out. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I think Brad Stevens, who plays he likes his team to play a certain type of basketball, gets handed teams from his general manager who don't fit his system. And that's not necessarily on Brad Stevens. Maybe it is a little bit on Brad Stevens, because I don't believe that Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge have zero conversation about, you know, who they add to the team. But I do feel as if whoever's evaluating these players or draft picks or whatever, in terms, it's a lot of Danny Ainge and his assistant GM, which is like his son or whoever's around him and whatnot. I don't believe they're giving Brad Stevens the proper team where he can find success. And you think about these early Celtics teams, Brad Stevens teams, where they was gritty, hungry. You had some gritty, hungry guys that wanted to prove something. They kept getting bounced around the league and not getting fair shakes, and they got a chance on the Celtics. They wanted to prove something. They needed a shot to prove something. And that's how they ended up playing well, because you got a bunch of guys who are locked in. You know, no one necessarily was a star, but they all had something to prove. Now, Brad Stevens' teams have kind of flipped over the last couple of years, because now he's had stars. It all started, Isaiah Thomas kind of started it, but then you get Kyrie, and then you get Gordon Hayward. You get Al Horford, and then Tatum and Brown shifting the stars. So now Brad Stevens is dealing with teams where you have stars, and now you got to figure out who can go around these stars and make it work. And I think, you know, Brad Stevens is kind of learning that too, because he's never been used to I don't even think when he was at Butler, he was used to coaching like that.
So that's a problem. That's a problem. Brad Stevens has shown that he can't coach egos. He's completely shown us that. I mean, we can talk about how Kyrie laid an egg against against Milwaukee, but that whole year was a disaster. You go into this year, I disagree. We're at the point where I agree with you that Brad Stevens is not a bad coach. Brad Stevens is not a bad coach, and everyone who says fire Brad Stevens, my only question is, who do you want to bring in? And that's my comeback to that. However, there have been times during this season that the team has zoned out Brad Stevens, and he has lost the team. It was clear to see during the season that Brad Stevens lost the team. I don't care what you watch some of these games. There was no reason Celtics were losing to the Detroit Pistons and the Washington Wizards and all of these bottom feeding teams. They lost because they weren't listening to the coach no more. Everyone was trying to get theirs. That's on the coach.
Well, who's everyone?
What?
Who's everyone? Just Tatum and Brown?
What do you mean, who's everyone on what?
What do you mean saying everyone's trying to get theirs?
Everyone's trying. Tatum, Brown, Smart. Kemba came back jacking up 40 shots when he can't shoot. Sorry, I keep going back to Kemba. But he lost the team, Mike. He lost the team. There was some bad losses. And we couldn't blame that on injuries. There was some bad loss. And you're looking at this and you're like, this team is such a disappointment. That's on the coach. Brad Stevens is a great coach. But we've seen players reach a certain level, he loses them. And it could be he's not a former basketball player, or he's just not rah-rah, or some, I don't know what it is, but there's times where he's lost players. Because you'd be looking at the games, it's like, there's no way in hell Brad said take this shot or make this play.
And, you know, the type of coach he is, and I think what you choose, him not being a rah-rah, yell at your player, get on you because you make a mistake, that's just the type of coach he is. That's what it is. You know, I think a lot of people I've grown to accept that. That's not who he is. And I get it. Cool. He's not going to yell at you. He's not going to blow up your spot if you do something stupid. He's just going to clap and like, all right, get him next time. That's just who he is. Some people coach like that. I get it. But Brad Stevens is just a coach. People above you should be able to see that and notice that and give you a different type of team. Not even just the players on the court. I'm talking about the coaching staff around you. Brad Stevens is not going to get on a player. Cool.
That's not cool.
Brad Stevens is not that type of rah-rah coach. I'm saying cool to that. That's just who he is. You're saying that's not cool? That he's not a rah-rah coach?
When you said Brad Stevens is not going to get on his players, cool. That's when I said, not cool.
Yeah, that's not cool. Brad Stevens should get on his players. The fact that he's not a yell-in-your-face type of coach, that's just who he is. I'm saying that part's cool. Them years the Celtics had them gritty, hustle, you know, want to fight every type teams, you had, one, those type of players around you, and then, two, you had, what, Walter McCarty as an assistant coach? I feel like they had another assistant coach early in Brad. Oh, that might have been the end of Doc Rivers. Clifford something. That might have been Doc Rivers' years. But either way, you have veteran. His right-hand man, it seemed like, was a former basketball player in Walter McCarty, who spent, what, 10-plus years or whatever in the league? And then the bunch of guys on the bench are dudes who wanted to fight and yell and pick fights and do different stuff. Come on. This current team that we're watching is soft. I know they brought in a former player in Evan Turner this year, but come on. He just started getting his feet wet in the coaching game. He's not ready for that life yet. He's learning. He could be a great coach. Who knows? He's not ready. And then you look at the rest of the roster. As much as I love Tatum and Brown, they're quiet and soft-spoken. They're the leaders because they're the best players, but they're not a Kobe Bryant type or a Chris Paul type or Kevin Garnett type. Right. You don't see them like that. And then you get past them to your boy Kemba Walker, who smiles when it's 12 feet of snow outside and his car's buried. He don't care. He's still smiling out the window. You know what I mean? Like, he don't care. That's your three guys who's nice, soft-spoken, don't you really get on anybody. Then you get past them, smart. I don't even think smart's the same guy anymore, but we can get into that. But you get past that. Tristan Thompson, he's bought maybe a little toughness, but it's his first year on the team. First year in a Celtics uniform. First year in the city. Then the rest of the roster is pretty much rookies and second-year players who, excuse me, who definitely not getting loud with anybody. So who are you turning to be your dog?
That's why when you see that, you turn to your head coach.
You say turn to the head coach. I say the GM should, if you know Brad brings some great qualities to the table and maybe some qualities you wish he'd had, but he's not there. What are you doing to add another piece in?
Hey man, all I know is Mike, when you blame the head coach, no one's asking for the GM to coach the head coach. The head coach is there on the floor and that's his job. It's his job to get his players ready for games. I hear all your points are right. And we're going to get back to who we want to blame the most. And somehow you found a way to get back to Danny Ainge. And I get it. And I completely get it. But let's, we can unravel on this whole Celtics season forever. And there's so much to get to. On this past weekend, this past series, I want to get back to the series real quick while we're here on Double M Live. You guys are watching right now. Give us a like, a share, go in the comments. We're seeing all the comments right now. There's a great question that came up that we will get to in a bit, Clifford. That's a really good conversation to have. I want to get back to this series. And a name that we brought up in Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving finally, you know, he came back. He came back to Boston. And we all know Kyrie knows how to manipulate the media. He knows how to talk and he knows how to do what he does. Question got brought up to him about, you know, you're finally going to go play against the Boston crowd. He played against Boston already, but there was no fans. So you finally get to play against the Boston crowd. You know, your thoughts and your feelings about it. Kyrie said, you know, I just hope that they keep it cool, keep it basketball, no belligerence, no racism that it's known for out there in Boston. That was said, and Lord and behold, right after he said that, there was mad incidents all across the NBA of fans just wilding out right before the Celtics game. So, Mike, first of all, before I even move on, your thoughts on what Kyrie said.
So, Kyrie's a slick guy. Real, real slick. You know, he's smart. Smart guy. Because everybody knows the whole situation of him going back to Boston and the reason why reporters are asking, you know, what do you expect the environment to be like when you get back to Boston? It had nothing to do with race. Had nothing to do with Kyrie, a black player, you know, going back to Boston that's had his issues with racism in the past. It had nothing to do with that at all. Zero. The reason Kyrie was getting these questions about returning to Boston is simple. Everybody knows it. You lied to an arena full of Boston fans saying that you were going to sign back, and you didn't. That's what it was. Nothing more, nothing less. You are a liar. You lied to the Celtics fans. You lied to the people in the TD Garden Arena. This slick guy flipped it and said, well, I hope I go back and it's, you know, there's no racism takes place. Of course that's going to spark conversations because we've heard and seen the stories in Boston. You've heard and seen the stories around the league, around the world, and other sports. The stories, the situation, they're all there. So as soon as you brought that topic into the conversation, it's going to spark things to go in various directions and various conversations and not focus on the one main topic of you being a liar to the Celtics fans. Slick guy. smart guy. So, you know, he changed the narrative. He changed where the focus was. Slick guy for doing that, but that's what he did. And he was successful at it because following those comments, then a whole bunch of other stuff arise that for the most part, and I don't even think listening to the different, you know, press conferences and what that was, I don't recall a reporter directly asking him about lying to the Celtics fans when he did, you know, 2 years ago, whatever it was. I don't remember hearing that question from anybody. So Kyrie kind of, he got what he wanted in a sense. I think he got exactly what he wanted.
Yeah, conversation definitely got sparked. Players came out. You know, Marcus Smart came out and pretty much said, of course, you know, being here from Boston, I've had my experiences of this, that, and the third. Tatum spoke out and said him personally, he's never experienced that, but he sees where Kyrie's coming from and he's heard from his teammates. Jaylen Brown came and he spoke beautifully for 4 minutes. He had a press conference, 4 minutes, speaking on, you know, how the real issue in Boston is, if we want to bring up racism, let's bring up systemic racism. Let's bring up the racism that's happening in schools, in jobs, and, you know, it's beyond basketball. If we really want to make it a real issue, let's bring up the real facts about it. And it was well said. I don't want to butcher his words. I suggest everyone who hasn't seen it, go look up what Jaylen Brown had to say on those comments. But one comment that really caught my eye, Mike, and I was very disappointed in, was Danny Ainge.
Oh my gosh!
Did you hear what I was?
I don't remember.
So
exactly, but yeah, go ahead.
He said, you know, in the 24 years that he's been in Boston, he's never heard any such players or teammates, players of his, complaining or hearing anything about racial remarks with the Boston fans. And right there, that was very disappointing for me to hear that. I like Danny Ainge as a person. I love what he's done for the Celtics and, you know, he's got us a chip and everything like that. And from everything, from all accounts, Danny Ainge is a good dude. Like, I have no issue with Danny Ainge, the person. Obviously, we can have our debates on how this team has been constructed and everything. But Danny Ainge as a person, never had an issue with it. And to say something so tone deaf, to say that in your 24 years that you never heard any of your players complain about, like, bro, you was playing in the 80s. You was playing in the 80s when it was the Celtics versus Lakers, and you already know how racially constructed that those series were. How are you going to say you've never heard, or comes out to be a shock to you? It's a bold-faced lie. You could have easily come out and say, you know, as Boston, we are trying to get better in this and this. I hate that Kyrie had to go through. There's so many ways you could have said something about this situation. And to pretty much say in your 24 years, you never really heard any of your players complain about something like that. When Marcus Smart, your own player, has come out and made articles, players tribunes that I've read on soul situations. When the whole Black Lives Matter things happened in the bubble, players were speaking up on personal experiences of fans and such. That rubbed me up the wrong way, man. Hearing Danny Ainge say that.
Yeah, he should have never said that in his 24 years or whatever the case may be. Like, I'm not gonna sit here and say he's a liar or whatnot, but because I don't know. But the fact of me, he shouldn't even have said that part. Leave that out of it. Because you're not oblivious and blind to the fact that, like you just said, Marv, the situations and stories are out there from past players, from present players. They're out there. So take out your personal, well, I've never heard anything. Take that out of there. Just be direct with the situation that is taking place and has been taking place. And be direct with those comments. He shifted the way he made it sound is like, well, it sounded from him coming. It seems fine to me because I've never heard nothing. That's not right. The case, Danny Ainge. And I'm not going to sit here and lie with you. He has heard something. I don't know what Danny Ainge has heard through his ears. I don't know that. But I don't think Danny Ainge is stupid and doesn't know what's happening in the world in which he lives in. So, yeah, that wasn't right. Those comments from him definitely, it shook a lot of people. You got players like Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart saying one thing on one side, and then your general manager completely saying something. It didn't look sound like it was just a bad situation. But, you know, Danny Ainge is not going to take no major flack for that.
Oh, no. Not from not from me, not from Boston.
Yeah, either. He's not going to take some major flack for that. No. People are probably looking at him, well, yeah, well, look what Danny Ainge said.
That's what Double M is here for, bro.
Yeah, he's not going to take any major flack for that. But we definitely going to call him out on that for sure.
So fast forward, game three happens. Kyrie stinks up the joint. Celtics win. You know, he gets the boos. He gets the boos, the FUs. You know, they're giving it to
Kyrie. The works.
They're giving it to him. Game four, they're giving it to him even more. The more FU chants, more boos, Kyrie goes off. He goes off for 39 points. I mean, that game four performance, one day, outside of a Celtics fan, I just got to go back on YouTube and watch how KD, Kyrie, and James Harden just went to work, because that was something. That was something. 104 points between them. KD went for 42. I think Kyrie went for like 39.
James Harden with a triple-double.
Triple-double, 18 assists. Like, that was incredible. Incredible performance. Anyways, Kyrie goes off. And he let the Celtics Nation hear about it when he goes, daps up his players, and then he stomps on Lucky on his way out. I know something happened after that, but we gotta take things one step at a time. So stomps on Lucky on his way out. Mike, nice. Initial thoughts then, and how you feeling now?
Yeah. Before I even dive into my comments, you know, shout out to all the people tuned in right now. Please drop your thoughts and feelings in the comment section for sure. We definitely want to know how y'all are feeling as well with our everything we're talking about, every topic, every situation. We want to know how y'all are feeling as well. So please drop your comments and thoughts and feelings in the section for sure. But yeah, he stomped on the logo, and that is a form of disrespect. I don't care what team it is, what your logo looks like. It don't matter to me. It's a form of disrespect. The man went to the logo and rubbed his foot in it. He rubbed his foot in the logo. And, you know, I've seen the different comments. I think someone brought Sean King. Had his comments about, you know, well, if you really want to get into racist and Kyrie stomping on a logo, you got to talk about the fact that the logo's a white man, Irish. I don't care about that. I care about the fact that he disrespected the team. He's disrespected the team. And KG had his comments. Big Baby, like, yo, you disrespect the team, everything the team stands for, everything the team's, you know, done over the years, the players who played. That's what he disrespected. It don't matter what team, what league, if you go do that on a logo of a team, you're disrespecting the team. And I was pissed then, and I was pissed now, and I was definitely pissed at the fact that throughout the whole press conference, post-game press conference that Kyrie had, nobody asked him about it. I'm still waiting for someone to ask him about returning to Boston after he lied. And I'm still waiting for someone to ask him about rubbing his foot on the Celtics logo. And I haven't heard those questions asked yet. And it's very frustrating. I don't know. Out of all the reporters, they get a chance to sit down with Kyrie or however they're doing the Zoom. I don't know how they're doing it. However they're doing it. Out of all the people that get a chance to talk to Kyrie, the fact that these questions have not been asked towards him is truly mind-boggling. Now, if I missed the questions, I haven't heard them in some interviews or whatnot, that's on me. But the times I've tuned in, I've yet to hear those questions be asked. But the fact remains, the man disrespected the Celtics when he dug his foot and stomped on the logo.
Yeah. It's disrespectful. I get it. And my issue isn't with Kyrie doing it, though. And I know I might be in the minority of it. You got people yelling F you at you, yelling booing, booing, you go off. So you're feeling yourself and you want to stomp on it. Okay, that just means Kyrie's a dirtbag or a punk or whatever type of name that you want to say. That's my issue is not with Kyrie. He already showed us who he is, right? My issue is with this current Celtics team.
Bunch of softies.
This is the team that's been defending Kyrie. Oh, we love Kyrie. You know, everyone is cool. They dap him up. They show the brotherhood is still there. Everything of that nature. Okay. Well, Kyrie just showed you what he thought of you guys. Came into your crib. Dropped damn near 40 on your light, too. Light. Didn't barely sweat. Then wipes the little dust on Lucky and walks out. You go into their crib the next day, which was tonight as we are recording. And as Super Soka says, no hard foul. No nothing. You accept it. You accept it. Celtics team has no pride. You let a man stomp on your logo. That's why I have no issue with Kyrie. I really have no beef with Kyrie doing it. Because I know I could never let a man come to my crib and just disrespect me. I couldn't do it. That's just Marv, though. I couldn't do it. He already dropped 40. Now you're just going to let him wipe his crap on your logo and walk off smiling while you guys are still there defending him, all buddy-buddy with him? Not one person. Grant Williams, outside of the Boston Celtics, you might not get a job. You should have gave him a quick little right to the ribs.
You don't get it, Marv.
Just to let a little something. Taco, you only in the game for 1 minute.
You see this? You know what? Hold on. Not even that. I think I got some over it. Hold on. Give me a second.
Who are you about to pull out?
You see this right here, Marv?
Who are you about to? Is that Charmin?
Bro, whole team. Whole
that, team. That's my issue, Mike, man. I get everyone talking about it's disrespectful. I get it. And I understand why fans would be upset about it. Sure. But be upset at your players who let that happen. Because they don't have as much pride. The Celtics team does not have as much pride as the Celtics fans. They don't have that. It doesn't match. It doesn't match.
Yeah, it's the softness that was put on display is very sad to see, especially for, you know, Celtics team with such rich history. You go back teams from a few years ago. I'm not even looking back to the teams of the 80s and, you know, the teams with Garnett and them. Like, even the teams from a couple years ago with Jonas Jerebko. And Crowder and Isaiah Thomas and young Marcus Smart. These dudes ready to fight everybody. They wanted beef with anyone and anything that did any kind of disrespectful. Or even you could bump into one of them dudes by accident and they're ready for war and they got to be separated. But now you're talking about somebody who damn near stomped on it, wiped his foot, damn near spat on the logo. And the next game, this man doesn't get touched. You don't brush him up in any type of way, shape, or form. You got all these dummies sitting on the bench who got fouls to waste. Fouls to waste. Guys sitting on the bench doing nothing. And you don't tell one of them to come in and be like, yo, yeah, we're losing, we're down. What? But Kyrie can't walk out of this just like, yeah, cool. And yeah, you in the Brooklyn Nets arena, you're going to get booed and whatnot. You may get ejected. You're flagrant two ejections. Sure. Like, and I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to hurt this man.
No, no.
But damn, he got to catch a tough elbow or something. That's to the chest.
Just to say, hey, we don't rock with that.
and you do that, and you say you maybe drop a swing there, mother, you know, something. These dudes didn't do nothing. All right, good game, Kyrie. Have a good luck next series against Milwaukee. Good luck. Sad. That's the type of team that's constructed now.
That's bad, man.
Young softies. Which is why, and because Danny Ainge built this type of team, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? We used to, all the years before, oh, man, Banner 18, we got to get it. I didn't see one type of Banner 18 commercial, nothing this year. Even the Celtics, the network knew it. They didn't even want to make a Banner 18 commercial. Why?
What? Why waste the budget?
Team sucks. No, we don't need no Banner 18 commercials. We're not even close. They're not even close.
And I think we took a step back. We took a couple step backs.
Several. We're talking about a team that was in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Three out of the last four, whatever the number was, in the Eastern Conference Finals. You damn near got swept in the first round and barely made it into the playoffs. What's the problem here? How do you go backwards? You don't get to the Eastern Conference Finals three of the last 4 years, last year, and you're not taking the proper steps to get to the promised land. You don't even put the card just in reverse. You make that card do a damn 180 and go the complete other way. You're not reversing in the wrong. You're just straight driving in the wrong direction right now. Danny Ainge.
That's why I don't think that the Celtics team is going to be a contender anytime soon. I think we've taken too many steps back to the point where you got to wait in line, Bucko. You're right with the Atlanta Hawks, the Knicks, the Hornets. That's where you are right now.
Which brings in another question. I mean, unless there's something you wanted to add more on this Kyrie.
We got one last thing we got to talk about, but go ahead.
Freestyle it.
We can jump back.
Get back to this Kyrie thing. You're here saying you don't think this team is going to be contending anytime soon.
I don't. Not with what the East is looking like.
What is Tatum and Brown's contract looking like?
Because I mean, you locked up Tatum and you locked up Brown for 3 to 4 years. So they're both 3 to 4 years.
3 to 4 years, and you over here saying you don't see them contending for a while.
You gotta go through one more year of a sucky team, and then when Smart and Kemba's gonna have one more year in his contract, so you can finally trade that, and Smart's contract's gonna come up. You get to unload Tristan's contract too.
All I'm saying is this: I think we're both in agreement that this team is driving the wrong way right now. They're not headed in the right direction. And we've seen how it looked it's looked over the years with players saying, yeah, cool, I want nothing to do with this sucky organization. You don't want to be pushing Brown and Tatum. You got something good with Brown and Tatum right now, Danny Ainge. You don't want to have these guys rethinking their future in Boston. Because in a perfect world, you'll have Tatum and Brown for the foreseeable future. Finish their careers as Celtics. Numbers going up in the rafters. Breaking all types of Celtics records. You want that to happen in Boston. I think the majority of people want that to happen. But at the end of the day, these dudes are doing all of this and not finding success. Why the hell would they want to stick around? Especially if your GM is building stupid teams over and over again.
It's a possibility. It's definitely a possibility.
You got your GM wanting to draft 4 and 5 guys each year. For what? For what? And especially Danny Ainge's track record, these draft picks ain't panning out. Yeah, Smart's been decent. Brown and Tatum's been great. But come on, that's 3 out of how many picks he's had over the years?
No, I hear you, man. I hear you for sure. Getting back into the Kyrie sex saga. It doesn't end after the stomp. As we know, as he leaves to the locker room, The one thing every Celtics fan watching at home was cringing and hoping the Boston Celtics wouldn't do is spit, throw popcorn, throw something at any of the players. And once again, we had someone throw a water bottle?
Yep.
Throw a water bottle at Kyrie's head. He was arrested. His name and picture was put out there, which I'm very happy about. We got to see him get arrested, put his picture out there. Obviously, he's banned for life and whatnot. But it's just another situation where you have a fan, and I brought it up to you, where when a Boston fan does something, the narrative is a little different. Like you saw what happened with the New York fan spit on Trae Young. It was okay. That was a New York fan, or the fan did that. Something's wrong with the fan. And you saw what happened with Westbrook and the popcorn. Okay, that fan did that. Something's wrong with the fan. But if something were to happen when a Utah Jazz fan were to do something, you're bringing up the city of Utah. City of Utah, they got that reputation of how they are. Boston fans, they do something. It's not just that fan. It's the city of Boston. Boston has that reputation of treating players such and such. And, you know, once again, Kyrie brought up race. And he's brought up – and KD, I thought, spoke wonderfully backing up Kyrie and just speaking how fans should just, like, grow up. And, like, this is – enjoy the game. These players are human too. I just don't know what people are thinking you can just throw stuff at players. And you want a real punishment, Mike? You throw something at a basketball player, put them in a room together, 30 seconds. Dump popcorn on Westbrook? Okay. Hey, Westbrook, you guys will be in this room. We'll time it for 30 seconds, and after that, we'll arrest him. Now let's see if anyone's doing any of that.
Yeah, just definitely two things.
These fans got to get their ass beat.
Yeah, there's definitely some things I wanted to bring up with this topic. I know I said this to a group of friends earlier. It's starting to feel as if there's a group of fans or people out there who are just intentionally doing stuff. I understand the first situation happened, but now the fact that it's happened again and again, and then someone throws that at Kyrie, and then some player ran out on the court in a Philly, Washington, like, you're intentionally trying to do the stuff. Why? I don't know. You got to be really tapped because you're going to get punished. Excuse me, you're gonna get arrested, you're gonna get banned for the reasons, like, you're gonna, but the fact that it's continuously happened now, it's starting to feel like it's a certain group of people or something that's intentionally trying to do this stuff, and it doesn't make any sense. And I think, yeah, the punishment needs to be stiff. And, you know, again, like you just brought up, you thought with the other stuff that happened that maybe possibly Boston could be smarter. Like, don't get me wrong, people can't stand Kyrie, hate Kyrie, whatever. But you're going to risk going to jail or getting banned from the arena all because you hate the man that much?
Yeah.
That it doesn't make sense to me. But, yeah, I love the fact that the pictures being put out there, put their name out there, let their faces get posted everywhere, for sure. Now, to add on to the comment you just made about putting them in a room for 30 seconds. Obviously, you can't do it like that.
Right. You guys know. Hopefully, you guys know I'm kidding.
But, you know, and I was thinking about this as I was driving home, because as I was stuck in traffic at a red light, you know, I had seen this quick image or a quick clip of Bradley Beal's comments talking about, like, yo, If you, I'm gonna put hands on you, pretty much. If we were to meet up, says something like that. But my thing is, you know, the whole thing is, oh, you gotta protect the players. You gotta do whatever to protect the players. And the players, you know, they have no opportunity to defend them. A player, a fan throws something at them, and as soon as the player gets hit, you got about 5-10 people trying to surround him, telling, "Oh, relax, don't go, calm him down." My thing is, clearly that person throwing something at the player has beef with the player.
Hey.
Get a hold of that player. I mean, that fan. And you have the player say, hey, clearly there's a issue here that this person has. At the end of the day, we're all human beings. Yeah, you're athlete, fan, whatever. At the end of the day, you're human beings. Say, hey, this person has an issue with you and they threw this thing at you, whatever, they spit at you. Let's meet together and have a sit down and conversation and talk about it. Now that's where it gets, I don't know who's there to kind of mediate, but let them have a conversation about it and see where it goes. I don't like the fact that the players aren't allowed to confront the person who did something.
You got to protect the player. When you say protect the player, it's not only protect them from harm. You got to protect their image, or their money, their sponsorship.
But I feel as if the
player got to be behind closed doors.
Behind closed doors in some type of way, the player should be able to confront the person who has been apprehended. I believe they should. Now, obviously, yes, you don't want them to go back there and fold somebody. Yeah, you don't want that. But the player should be able to confront the person who's apprehended who did whatever act. You spit, you threw something, dumb popcorn. The player should have a right to speak to that person. Because at the end of the day, once that player gets apprehended, they're holding them, you know, somewhere in the arena. I don't know if they zoom out to – I don't know how it works. But clearly the person's apprehended. And in a couple of these situations, it's happened when the game's over. The Kyrie situation happened when the game's over. The Westbrook situation happened when he was leaving the court. I believe they should hold him in the arena till the game's done and let that player have an opportunity to confront the person and let them talk it out. I say talk, you know.
Ain't gonna be no talking. Like Super Soka says, spit was worse. That one's crazy.
Yeah.
That one's crazy. And for Trae Young, I don't know if he felt it or just
the video would seem like he didn't notice.
Decided not to react or whatever, but that one, bro. Oh God.
Yeah.
Oh man. God was with that fan, because someone to spit on you.
Yeah, that's spitting on somebody is, to me, the ultimate sign of disrespect.
That's
ultimate.
I don't even know how to react. But I do want to bring up. I don't want to ignore the fact that race was being brought up, and how, let's be honest, these are white people throwing objects at black athletes. Or spitting at black athletes, or causing these things at black athletes. It needs to be brought up, and it's sickening to see. We can't ignore that. We can't ignore that. It's white people who feel privileged enough to throw something and hit the player just because they are providing entertainment for you. Brings back to the past where black people were just entertainment for people, and you can do whatever you want and jeer, and that's not the case. And some people are gonna be like, oh no, that's just a drunk fan, or this is a fan who it had nothing to do with race. But when you really think about it, it does. It still has something to do with race, because you have these black athletes performing for those who are privileged enough to come watch the game and be entertained. Yet still feel that they have the privilege enough to throw something and be okay, and it'll be okay, and it'll be all right.
Yeah, it's not a good look. It's not a good look at all. And I mean, like you said, every situation we've seen continuously is a white fan doing something to a black athlete. I've yet to see in these past the Kyrie, the Westbrook, the incidences in Utah, it continuously is a white fan doing something to a black athlete. And I've yet to see a black fan doing something to one of the white athletes. That's just what we're seeing. You're talking about what keeps happening, what you keep seeing, that's what you keep seeing. And it's an unfortunate. And, you know, like you said, it goes back in history as to what has happened to black people who was seen as, oh, they're just entertainers, performers. And, you know, there's the history there. The history is there, which opens why it opens people's eyes today when you see it and the conversations arise. It doesn't make sense to me as to why people would want to risk, you know, legal action taken against them, want to risk being barred from arena for life. Like, I don't understand why you can't go to a game and just sit down, watch, and go home. If you know you can't go to a game without maybe getting drunk and being stupid, stay your ass at home. Like, all types of, we're here talking about a player and fan getting meeting in the back. That's probably not going to happen, but we're talking about real punishment. There should be no, they need to be banned from that arena for life. And then also face legal action.
You have to find them.
That's it.
You have to find them. You got to hurt their pockets, put them in jail. It has to be to the point where you're crazy to even think about doing something like
that. A lifetime ban needs to be the automatic punishment at every arena. You can't be that itchy to want to throw popcorn or food at somebody perform. You can't be that itchy to do it. Like, it doesn't register to me as to what triggers you to even want to run on the court. Like, I'm not even talking about, you know, throwing stuff. What triggers you to say, hey, I know there's a game going on, but I want to run on the court just to every look. What triggers that? I don't get it. I don't understand it.
That's crazy. And I know Super Soaker said the spitting is the worst. But, like, I'm just imagining Westbrook walking off pissed that he hurt his ankle. Tight. Head down. And then someone screams something at him and just dumps popcorn. Like, I can't imagine that rage he was.
Oh, in. Westbrook looked like he was ready to go up there and tear that dude's head off.
And had all the reason to, but at the end of the day, the cameras were on Westbrook. The cameras on Westbrook being mad and frustrated, and this looks like an angry black man. But the camera should never have been on him. Who's dumping the popcorn?
Yeah. Then you gotta search out all these side random grainy footage camera angles of the person doing it. It's crazy. It's crazy. And again, the fact that it's has happened, you know, over and over, it just is like, yo, what are people thinking? Like, it happens, it gets plastered on the news, and then the next game, it's something again happens again. Like, what are people thinking? I don't know, man. I don't know.
I'm about to tell you something real quick because we are doing a live show, Mike. We're doing a live show. So while we're doing this live show, there's another playoff game going on right now, right? You got the Phoenix Suns versus the Los Angeles Lakers.
Let's go, Phoenix. Give me some, Mike, good news.
The score at the second quarter right now, 66-36.
Phoenix. Let's go.
It's a 30-point blowout in the second quarter. In the second quarter.
A 30-point
blowout.
There's some people that's not going to want to hear this, but I'm going to tell you this. And it's okay to accept it, but LeBron ain't the same no more. He's still great. Like, he's not I'm not saying like he's a bad player. He sucks. But like, he ain't carrying that team. He's not carrying that team. They need Anthony Davis. They need him. They need that combination. This ain't LeBron from a couple years ago. We put that Cleveland team on his back and he can't. They need Anthony Davis. Maybe they can get by Phoenix, but if it's just LeBron throughout the rest of the playoffs and no Anthony Davis, they're done. They're screwed. But I digress.
We'll get to see how that goes. I know we had a couple other comments. Anything else you want to bring up on this Celtics season, the Celtics series, game, and whatnot?
I mean, at this point, it feels kind of like continue to beat a dead horse. I think that's the saying. But it's just disappointment doesn't add enough. It doesn't describe enough in this season. Danny Ainge really needs to take a look in the mirror. You really fumbled what could have been a great season away. And especially knowing the fact that other teams around you loaded up and you didn't do anything to load up and try to get better, try to improve. It's very sad and sickening to see. And people don't want to hear it. Danny Ainge's job needs to be looked at. I flip-flop from back and forth from Danny Ainge's job needs to be looked at right now. And we're going to see by the time Tatum and Brown's careers over, the Celtics' careers over, what has Danny Ainge done before his job get looked at. I keep flip-flopping from those two sides of it. But it's just... I'm a full-blown, you know, I'm a Celtics fan. I'm a full-blown Celtics fan. And I watched a lot of games this season, watched every playoff game. But, like, deep down inside, I was clocked out a long time ago. See? I was clocked out a long time ago because that's how heartbroken I was, knowing the fact that this team a year ago was knocking on the doors of the NBA Finals and then a year later struggling to stay in the playoffs. I was clocked out a long time ago. I watched because I'm a Celtics fan and I wanted to see Tatum Brown do well. But just overall, having hope that this team could continue to be on the rise and get close to the banner 18, knowing that this team wasn't going to be like that from the offseason, part of me was clocked out on this team. I supported them. I watched the games. And I hope they can beat Chicago tonight. I hope they can beat the Pelicans tonight. Yeah, sure. But, like, overall, in terms of where the season was headed, I knew what was coming.
Yeah, I think most people weren't batting a blind eye. No one's surprised about how this season ended, especially when, hey, you put yourself in a situation where you faced the Brooklyn Nets. Everyone's going to be like, oh, but we faced Brooklyn. You put yourselves in that situation. You didn't have to face Brooklyn. In the last 2 weeks of the season, the number four spot was right there for you, right there for the taking. Celtics continue to fold, fold, and fold. And we're going to have a long offseason. A long offseason to really think about what's next for the Boston Celtics, as right now the teams are wrapping up and are speaking on their season and how they felt. I mean, highlights of the season for me was Jaylen Brown. Amazing. Amazing from growth from Jaylen Brown, from what he's come from his rookie year to seeing him now. Definitely a highlight. Are there things he needs to improve on? Of course. But I'm excited to see that duo of Tatum and Brown. Tatum, that once he came back, recovered from COVID, there was a point where, look, I'm a Jaylen Brown fan. And there was a point where you're looking at Brown and Tatum and you were telling yourselves, look, these guys are really neck and neck. Tatum took that step. Yeah. Tatum took that step to where no longer is neck and neck, but he's knocking on the door superstardom if he's not there already. He's really knocking on that door like, I'm here. You guys saw what he did in the past 2 weeks. And yeah, talk about just dropping 50 like it's nothing. The tough jumpers. He's put it all together. He's put it all together. Next year, he can be really scary. So I love – those are my two highlights. Obviously, Peyton Pritchard looked good this year. I think he has a pretty good future with the Boston Celtics. I'll leave it at those three.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I despise Danny Ainge putting a lot of faith in draft picks contributing right now, Pritchard looked like he can be a solid contributor moving forward. Naismith started off real shaky, but I think he found his niche in a sense in terms of using his youth and providing athleticism. You know, obviously as years goes on, you know, your athleticism might, you know, decrease, but if he can continue that hustle and athleticism he has and continues to, you know, form his shot, because, you know, he came out of college a shooter, I think he can be someone relied upon. Other than those two, I think half the roster needs to be cleaned out. A lot of those guys who played this season do not need to wear Celtics uniform next season. I know some people are up and down on Jabari Parker. I personally believe, because last year, 2 years, Jabari Parker wasn't playing meaningful basketball. They didn't really care for him in Sacramento. I forgot where he was before that, but like he wasn't in a situation where they really cared. And I think Sacramento stopped playing him. And from all accounts, I think from what Brad Stevens said when they signed him, they believe it's going to be a project. He can add something to this team. When Jabari Parker is locked in, if just go back and look at Milwaukee Jabari Parker. And I believe that if he can, if he knows he's going to have a legit role with the Celtics and he can get in shape and really focus in on his craft, I think he's only, what, 20, like 5, 26 years old. I believe Jabari Parker will be a huge contributor to this team, you know, off the bench next year. Time Lord. That's a good question there.
I left him out on purpose.
Time Lord, obviously, when fully healthy, you see what he's capable of doing. But I'm scared to put the label of straight injury. It's getting close to putting the label of injury prone on that man.
I put it on him. I mean, like, he hasn't been healthy with us any season.
Yeah, and it's always something else. It's his knee, it's his toe. I feel like one time it was his hip.
His hip took him out.
He's continuously dealing with something over and over. And for a guy who's maybe, I don't even know if that dude's 24 years old, could be dealing with this over and over again. It's tough.
Yeah, his career is looking. If he loses his athleticism,
he's nothing.
He's not really an NBA prospect in this league. I mean, he's amazing. The guy's 6'8". Like, you forget that when you watch him because he does not play 6'8" at all. Incredible talent. I think he would have been helpful in this series as well. But health is a real thing, man. And unfortunately, he couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, Time Lord. You know, let's hope that with this time off early now, you get extra time to rest. He could just get into great shape and heal up all his injuries, and you could just hope that you get a healthy season out of him next year. But the fact just remains, we're talking about the top teams in the East, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly. I don't think those three teams are going anywhere.
Mm-mm.
So Danny Ainge, you're in a situation, you shouldn't be in a situation, but you're in a situation now where you have to play catch up. Will you be able to be better than any of those three teams? I doubt it. But you got to do whatever you can this offseason to get back in the conversation with those teams. Because right now, those three teams, well, obviously Brooklyn is probably top of the line, but like those three teams are the top of the East. And then after that, it's just, Atlanta, maybe New York and Boston, they're kind of mixed in. You got to find yourself to separate yourself from the Atlanta and New York. And you got to find yourself to put yourself as close to that, those top three teams as possible. Yeah, and I honestly believe they're not too far from doing it because they have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I just, again, it boils down to who are you putting around them to find success, you know, and that's where I'm leaving it off with my comments, man.
Awesome, man. This is, I do want to bring up a point, Mike.
Go ahead.
And it has nothing to do with the Celtics. I'm done doing Celtics talk. I think you tied that up in a bow, and we don't need to talk Celtics for a little bit as we enjoy the rest of this playoffs. We'll probably still be doing a lot of fun basketball talk going forward here on Double M. And then, you know, we need an off season too from the Celtics a little bit. That's to digest on everything on everything that happened. But due to the fact that I don't know when's the next time we're going to be able to talk about this and it's fresh, I want to get this off my chest now. I want to speak on Naomi Osaka and that situation before we get out of here. She just withdrew from the French Open. She just withdrew from the French Open. And before I give you my thoughts on everything, I want to read her IG post and then go from there. So she goes on, says, "Hey, everyone, this isn't a situation I ever imagined or attended when I posted a few days ago. I think now the best thing for the tournament, the other players, and my well-being is that I withdraw so that everyone can get back to focusing on tennis going on in Paris. I never wanted to be a distraction, and I accept that my timing was not ideal and my message could have been clearer. More importantly, I would never trivialize mental health or use the term lightly. The truth is that I suffer long bouts of depression since the U.S. Open in 2018, and I have had a really hard time coping with that. Anyone that knows me knows I'm introverted, and anyone that has seen me at the tournaments will notice that I'm often wearing headphones, as that helps dull my social anxiety. Though the tennis press has always been kind to me, and I want to apologize especially to all of the cool journalists who I may have hurt, I'm not a natural public speaker, and the huge waves of anxiety before I speak to the world's media. I get really nervous, and I find it stressful to always try and engage and give the best answers I can. So she goes on to thanking Paris and everybody else. I think this situation is so unfortunate and so sad. We on this show, we try to, you know, do our best to advocate for mental health, and people need to start listening to these players, bro. These players aren't the same from the 90s and 80s and 70s. Like, this is a whole different generation growing up with whole different things that those players never grew up with. Jordan never had to deal with what LeBron's dealing with. There wasn't no social media. Like, I think that it plays a huge role on everything that's going on. And Naomi Osaka brings up, she's been dealing with depression since that U.S. Open in 2018. If people remember that, I don't know how many tennis fans are out there, but if people remember that U.S. Open, that was her first bout against Serena Williams. And there was a hell of a battle. Hell of a battle. And Serena was going at the, the umpire she was going at it to the point that she lost a point. And due to the fact that she lost a point, Naomi won. And it felt like, damn, Naomi only won because Serena lost that point because Serena couldn't handle her cool. It was like, no, Naomi really won that. She was really playing well. And fast forward now, she's always beating Serena, it seems like. But at that time, that was their first bout against each other. And that was a lot. Everyone's rooting for Serena to, you know, get that 24. Naomi just beat her in a way that it wasn't even her fault. And she says since then, she's been dealing with depression, and she can't handle, you know, speaking with press and things like that. And obviously, I get it. As a player, contractually, you have to do it, right? You got sponsors and everything like that. The sponsors need you to go up there and speak. That's how you get paid, and I understand that. But when you have a superstar who's telling you, hey, this is not really good for my mental health, or I'm dealing with anxiety, why can't you guys be like, okay, what can we do to help? What can we do to, you know, ease this? Can we maybe find a way where we can limit the questions for you? Or maybe, you know, we can coach you up on how to deal with press or things like that. She didn't get none of that. She got a, hey, if you don't answer none of these questions, we're going to fine you. We're going to fine you. And then the owner of the French Open, he comes out and says, yeah, Naomi has to come up and speak. And if she doesn't speak, she's going to get fined, or we have to move, probably think of doing further action. And then what the ironic thing he said, and I'm not taking any more questions. What kind of hypocritical son of a gun are you? Like, how do you come up as on a press conference, say, this is what we're going to do to Naomi, and she doesn't want to take questions, and you're not going to take questions either, because that's how it goes for you. Young woman, 24 years old, just figuring out stardom. You're probably the biggest name in tennis right now. Figuring out stardom. It's coming out and saying, hey, guys, I'm dealing with something. This is tough on me. Help. Help. You got a black woman, Asian woman, asking for help. First thing they're doing is shutting her down. And that is an embarrassment to the sport. It's so sad that she has to come out and apologize. apologize for her mental health that she's dealing with. I'm glad that she's taking a stand and she's taking her time away, and I'm wishing her the best, and I'm wishing her that she does amazing things with her rest and she comes back and she dominates when she can. But this is an embarrassment. And the sports just need to do better. When people are coming out speaking on mental health, you can't come out and praise all these players are speaking about mental health and not do anything when they're talking about they're dealing with it. You can't do that. And so I'm disappointed about the whole thing. I definitely wanted to speak on that.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's important to speak about. You know, you pretty much said everything I would imagine I wanted to say as well. It's just, you know, obviously athletes are kind of, they're seen sometimes as like robots. Perform, speak, perform, speak, perform, speak. And then, you know, you talked about a little bit, we live in a day and age now where social media is running rampant. And, you know, obviously people are built differently. They can handle some things certain type of ways. Some people are better at handling things ways. I mean, Venus Williams just came out and she was like, yeah, I know. I see what's going on with Naomi. And, you know, the way I'm built is, you know, I don't. She personally doesn't let what's out there being said get to her. Like she said, I don't let it bother me because of X, Y, and Z, and I continue moving on. But that just, excuse me, that's just how she handles it. Everybody handles things differently. And, you know, dating back to that, you know, 2018 match with Serena and Naomi getting kind of tossed into stardom and the way she won and whatnot, the type of things that's probably getting thrown at her through social media and questions. The type of person she it probably got to her. And, you know, she probably tried to handle it the best way she could. But, you know, like I said, everybody handles things differently. And the most important thing you said, Marv, there is, you know, she's getting forced to do X, Y, and Z. But as much as, you know, the sport of tennis and you know, different people who sponsor her and whatnot, they want to elevate her and they want her to be the best and they want to put her on this commercial and this magazine and do this and that and the third, do they ever stop to say, well, we want you to be the superstar poster athlete of this, but are you good? Are you okay? No one really stopping. And that goes for any other athlete in any other sport. You know, I don't believe sometimes athletes in a sense get checked in on. They just, you're very good at this sport, so you need to talk about it, you need to play, you need to continue, bang, 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 keep going. But sometimes it's never a situation where they get checked on and you know, get asked, are you good? You know, are you, where are you at mentally to continue doing this? Like, you know, it's just something to think about. I mean, you know, as people in the media, as fans, we don't think about it sometimes because, like I said, you're just expecting athletes to perform, speak after the game, speak after, like, sometimes we say it like that, but at the same time, you know, as it's getting brought up more, and especially in Naomi's situation, like, they're human, like everybody else, they're dealing with stuff, so everybody else, and because she's human, and just like other people do in other situations, other jobs and occupations that they may have, you have to step away to get yourself together. And if anybody is mad at Naomi for stepping, as great as she is at tennis, as big as a star she is, if anybody's mad at her for stepping away to get her mental right, then you might have to check yourself too. And understand, like, this is bigger than a sport. This is bigger than tennis. It's bigger than, you know, it's bigger than that. She has to make sure she's good before she continues and proceeds. So, you know, like you said, I agree 100%. I'm happy that she's stepping away to get herself right, to take the time that she needs to be in a better place. And, you know, I wish her nothing but the best. And I look forward to the day, you know, she steps back on the court. You know, we grew up and all we know in tennis is Serena Williams, you know, yeah. Venus Williams. But now this young girl is taking over. She continuously beats Serena's ass lately.
With poise.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's very humble with the situations. Every time she does speak to the media, like, she's humble, she's nice. I remember she beat the other young girl, Coco Gauff.
Yeah.
And Coco's there crying, bawling her eyes out. Naomi's trying to be so humble and be like, it's okay. Like, it was very nice to see. But yeah, she's the next one up, next big athlete on the rise. So, you know, I hope that she's just in a good space mentally, whatnot, and whatnot, where she can, you know, push forward and continue and be at peace with who she is, where she is, and what she's doing.
For sure, man. Shout out to Naomi Osaka. With that being said, maybe Serena can get that. Can get that one.
Hey, if you just if we talking strictly tennis now, with Naomi out the picture, this might be your time, Serena.
This might be it. She gets that illustrious 24 that she's been looking for years now. It'd be nice to see. But
yeah.
This is Double M, man.
Whew.
Double M. A lot of Celtics talk got me sweating. Hot. Celtics have been eliminated from the playoffs in the first round. Oh man, there's going to be a lot of turmoil, a lot of rumors. There's going to be a lot going on, Celtics fans. So please, you know, put your seatbelt on. It's going to be crazy. And I'm going to leave you guys with a hot take. In the next 2 years, Danny Ainge doesn't get fired or anything like that, but he resigns.
You wouldn't hear any sadness from me. I'll tell you that.
Mike Nice, man. Marv is on. Double M Live. We'll see you guys next week. This was episode 83. This show was so hot, we didn't even get to talk about that number 83 and how illustrious it is. But we'll probably do a double dose next week.
For sure.
Peace.